This episode is sponsored by Cisco. We asked Cisco's Vice President for Australia and New Zealand, Ben Dawson, what business leaders should think about next when it comes to hybrid working. Stay tuned at the end of this episode to hear his comments.
Hello and welcome to this week's CXO Challenge interview on the IT News podcast. On the show this week, we have two guests from Navitas. Chelsea Pierce, who is Head of Marketing Services for Navitas Australasian and University Partnerships Division, and Richard Eason, who is the Head of Technology and Systems in Global Sales and Marketing. Navitas is building on some technology foundations to, in their words, redefine the educational journey for domestic and international students in Australia, with increased tailoring and personalisation. Please enjoy the conversation. Maybe just to start, are you able to give me a brief overview of the Navitas organization and also of the company's technology operations, or maybe specific to this area of technology operations?
For sure. I'll do the first part and then I'll hand to Richard for the technology portion. So Navitas was founded in 1994. It's an Australian company. We're basically involved in transforming people's lives through education. So we've got over 30 partners globally, 120 campuses around the world. And this project is specifically focused on our University Partnerships Division, which has a large matrix workforce across the world. Richard, do you want to speak to our tech stack and how this sits within that scope?
We've been with Adobe for a number of years, especially in the Marketo space. So this is really looking at what else we can do with those product stack. We do have various different systems in the content management space. So we're looking at bringing that together. Pretty normal landscape and some Adobe products that we've had for quite some time here.
And in terms of the technology operations, how many people would be working within this part of the organization for technology and maybe more broadly within technology itself?
In the marketing teams, there's around 50 to 60 staff across the world who will work within these different tools. Richard, do you want to speak more broadly to our IT teams?
Yeah, so we've got a model that's got some central capability, and we also have some capability within our divisions, close to our business units and customers, which is really important for us. So we have quite a diverse team. We do work with partners as well, and we do that across quite a number of different facets of our technology architecture.
So Richard, just specifically for you, is the technology operation, is it like a hub and spoke style where you've got some central function, but also some, as you say, decentralized specific capabilities within different parts of the organization?
That's correct. Yeah, there's certain things that make more sense to do more as a central type area, and there are others that make more sense to do closer to the business units and supporting our customers and students.
And just from a technology architecture standpoint, can you give me a sense top line of what the organization runs on in terms of its infrastructure?
For this, you obviously have Adobe top of funnel. Going further downstream, we have standard ERPs, we have some CRMs, etc. But like everywhere, our architecture is improving and we're going to be investing further in that. And we've talked to some of that for top of funnel.
So specifically for this project, so you mentioned that you've had Adobe in place for some time or some Adobe-based capabilities in place for some time. Maybe it will be good to start with what you have in place now, and then we can get to what the business case is for improving that or changing that up or uplifting that capability.
Navitas has had Marketo since 2011. We were one of the first large enterprise customers of Marketo. So it's really been the workhorse of our marketing stack for a very long time. We've got long cycle nurturing required for our typical 3 to 18 month decision-making journeys that our students go through. So really that has been the core way that we've engaged with students through email and SMS for a very, very long time. We've also had Adobe Target that we've licensed in pilots over the last 2 years as well as a part of a digital customer experience project that we were running to do some pilots and proof of concepts around how personalization was going to work within our organization. So those are kind of the main two Adobe tools that we've had. We have several different CMSs that we use across the organization. A proprietary one that we developed in 2011, which has some legacy in some areas of the business, and then everything from SilverStripe right through to WordPress.
When you say long cycle nurturing, can you give us a sense of what the kind of journey is that you're tracking?
Yeah, so students come through at various points in the funnel. I don't know how much you know about education and the cycles, but education is a large investment for most people. And there's a heavy amount of decision-making that goes into that, especially if you're an international student or a parent and you're going to send your child across the world. So people tend to start looking years in advance of their child or themselves actually making the move to commence with an institution. So what we have is people coming through and inquiring and that really top of funnel awareness stage, right the way through to the typical decision-making and then the bottom of the funnel conversion. With international students, I think the additional nuance there is even once they've converted, it's quite an anxious time for most people because you're going through visa processing, you're going to be moving to a place that you're not from. So there's all the Maslow's hierarchy of need things that have to be undertaken. You need to get a house, you need to own an apartment, you need to find out where the local grocery store is, really basic stuff that you have to do to get a bank account. So Marketo has allowed us to be able to drip feed that information to people at key points in their journey over time to try and streamline that for them and relieve some of that anxiety and make them feel supported as they go through that process with us.
And approximately how long would you be typically interacting with a student or engaging with a student either before they sign up or then from the sign up all the way through to where they're studying with you?
Well, there's different types of journeys that we have created with Marketo in the past. Everything from those top of funnel, would you like more information related to the program or the institution or even the city or country that you want to study in, right the way through to pre-arrival information. So really specific information around how they get from the airport to the campus, what campus housing is, how to do your visa, things to be aware of, that sort of stuff. It can be years and years that we have these conversations digitally.
You mentioned at the top of the conversation that there was more that could be done with the Adobe suite. Are you able to give us a sense of what more there is to do, but also, I guess, tying that more back to the business challenges in terms of how those might relate to things that you want to find out?
I think even just something as simple as making sure that all of our business units, as we call them, or colleges or entities or managed campuses, are all in one content management system so that there's efficiencies there from having the digital asset manager. We've got disparate design teams and development teams. We've got some staff in India, some staff in Singapore, some staff in Brisbane, some staff in Sydney. It goes on and on. So you can imagine that having everyone in one place, able to access the same information and all of the benefits that an enterprise CMS like Adobe provides you, solves an immediate issue for us as a business. But it also provides a better experience for the students because the ability for us to create, as I said, better journeys and the personalization that is available in Adobe. And obviously we're at the very beginning of this journey, so watch this space as this evolves for us. But our expectation is that we'll be able to create more personalized journeys and provide things like translation where appropriate, the right information relevant to specific student needs at each point in their journey, and know those individuals in a more intimate sense, if that makes sense.
So at the moment, how much duplication in tools is there, or duplication in capabilities, or differences between all of these different owned entities and avatars?
I don't know if it's so much duplication. It's really just people are working in different tools. I guess it is duplication. They're working in different tools to do very similar things. And there's the handover for, let's say, an image from a designer into a developer's hands to put into X, Y, and Z system is more manual. So this will allow an uplift in efficiencies there immediately. So that's just one example of many that we expect to see.
Maybe I just need to step back a little bit, but over time, basically, can you explain how this kind of environment evolved? So from what I understand from this, all of the different areas or units or aspects of Navitas were able to stand up some of their own systems to do what they had to do internally. But now there's a drive to centralize some of those technologies and have a single instance that is sort of globally accessible and also to standardize some of the things that are on or in that platform.
I think like most matrix organizations, we've evolved with different people running at different speeds and there's different focuses. And obviously we're a hub and spoke. So what is a focus for one division at one time may not be the focus for another division at another time. However, when we're looking at this now, it does make sense for us to be able to do the same sort of things, run at different speeds, focus on different things in a system that provides that agility to everyone, but is also best in class. So that was really the main part of the decision making. I mean, Richard, there's obviously a few hundred other things that came into that, if you want to speak to that as well.
Just to add to that, I think definitely from a data and analytics point of view, it's important to be able to see a more holistic picture. It's both sides, isn't it? It's the supporting and enabling those business units really close to customer and partner, yet having some consistency around process and efficiencies in system, and know that you've got good quality data at your fingertips.
Is the focus of all of these areas now more aligned in the sense that the global situation now has created changes, particularly within the education sector? So therefore, maybe some of the things that were driving different markets or different units, those needs have come together. There's more shared kind of need across all of those different areas.
We actually started this journey before COVID. So Navitas is always able to benefit from our diversity, but this is obviously part of the focus of how we roll things out now, but it definitely didn't drive our decision from the beginning. We were well into this piece before COVID commenced.
Where are you hoping to drive to from a customer experience standpoint? What's the kind of step change in the digital experience that you're hoping to create through this work that you're about to undertake or you are starting to undertake?
I think initially it's a focus on the personalization. So we're really focused on delivering the best experiences for our students, whether that's online or on campus or a hybrid of the two. And we want from the top of funnels and the second they inquire right through to the minute they graduate for us to be able to provide more personalized, more supportive experiences to help them get wherever it is they want to go. And I think the personalization elements, obviously underpinned by all the amazing data and all the things that you can do with Adobe Sensei, Adobe is able to help us do that. There are a million cases in which I would love to be able to use the tool. But again, we're at the very beginning of this journey. So for us, it'll be mapping those journeys and then putting the Adobe stack to work, really sweating the tech at some point soon.
And how have you structured this program of work? How are you sort of dividing up what you're going to do and what capabilities you're going to roll out?
I think, and Richard can speak to this, but the data and everything and the integrations is the linchpin of all of it. We're focusing on that area initially. Richard?
There's a rollout plan across the business. There's a priority on that. But yeah, the architecture under this, which obviously data is a key part of it, but the architecture and the way the systems are put together, the way they play together, and the way they play further down our pipeline, it's hugely important for us. We've got to make sure we get that right. We're going to do a lot of testing, a lot of thinking architecturally with this, and then we will look to put this out over time in a prioritized way across the various business units.
Have you piloted any of this technology internally, or are you going to use this as like a process to create MVPs, for example, and just to do it all on the fly?
We piloted Adobe Target initially in 2019 from one of our larger entities to great success. And then we piloted it two more times across the same entity again, and then with different experiences, and then across one of our internationally focused colleges at the time. So we have used the stack before, and obviously we've got a breadth and depth of experience with Marketo. It's not new to us, these tools.
And on the personalization side, how personalized are you hoping to create some of those experiences? How deeply are you able to enable that personalization?
I think it's as long as a piece of string, that one, because if you have the data available, you can make it as incredibly personalized as you'd like to. I think there's a rationale to start with something simplistic to prove concept in terms of just making sure you're getting it right and really getting that feedback, both from the data feedback loop, as well as also doing the human element to that, making sure the students really are getting what they need from the personalization that we're creating. And then obviously we can roll out complexity. We're focusing on top of funnel initially, and then we will move to see if there's any other points in the student life cycle where this sort of personalization would really benefit the students.
Mm. And are you doing it from a point in time in terms of being able to understand and personalize these student journeys? So from the top of the funnel perspective to start with, for example, or are you going to go back through maybe 18 months or 24 months of data and start to work out or start to map those bits of data together to create some personalization around people that are already in the funnel or on their journey, for example?
We're going to be looking at the pilots that we've done initially and using the data we have, the historical data, obviously, to see where we could find efficiencies and increase the uplift for students and that sort of stuff. So we'll definitely be doing that. And then where we believe that there are new instances of usage, we will look at that as well. But obviously, it's best to find those quick wins initially.
What excites you about 2021, 2022?
For my part, this is a huge project for Navitas, and personally, I'm really excited that we're going on this journey and to be part of it. So for me, being at the tip of the iceberg with how we can use these tools and starting off on this is probably where I see 2022 being exciting for me. What about you, Richard?
The whole thing, I think there's so much opportunity out there, isn't there? There really is. And let's hope that if things do start to open up and things improve, obviously everyone's hoping for that. And I think the more we use data, the more we use tools, the better architecturally we get, the more we know that we can. We've seen that, we've had proof of concept in that. We know that we can get better experiences for our students. That will flow on to our partners. So overall, it's a really interesting initiative, as Charles has said, to be part of. We also got to keep our heads down. We've got to make this work. We've got to get the investment right. But pretty good thing to be involved in.
Hi, I'm William Mark, Commercial Editor at IT News. Lots of Australians are continuing to get used to changes in their working environments. And many of their employers have put technologies in place to make remote work possible. But what are the long-term implications for business and IT leaders and managers? What should they be thinking about next when it comes to long-term hybrid working? Here to tell us more is Ben Dawson, Vice President, Australia and New Zealand at Cisco. Ben, a lot of companies have been in survival mode when it comes to hybrid working. What should they be thinking about next?
I think the opportunity for business leaders is to do two things. One is to understand that there's going to be this agility or need for agility in the business model of organisations, given the fluid nature of what's going on around us. But the second is, I think there's a real opportunity here for business leaders to shift from a keep the lights on approach to hybrid working to truly looking at it as a source of competitive advantage and competitive differentiation. Yeah, if done well, hybrid work can boost productivity. It gives us an opportunity to engage employees in a different and, in many cases, better way. And also support our customers more effectively, customers and stakeholders more effectively. So I do think that's a mindset shift to see it as an opportunity to differentiate.
You mentioned obviously the remote workers enabling them to work where and when they want. I suppose would be an important aspect now when you're trying to attract and retain the right staff too.
Definitely, I think creating a hybrid work environment is going to be a factor in recruiting and retaining talent. It's not just about the role itself. I think employees are going to want to understand what organisations offer in terms of that flexible work environment. I certainly see during COVID, people have changed the way they interact with businesses, and that blurred the line effectively between their work environment and their home environment. And I think elements of that people are going to expect to retain. I do think they will judge employers and the attractiveness of roles based on, at least in part, the type of hybrid work experience that organisation can provide.
Ben, what makes a successful hybrid workplace?
The aspiration, from my perspective, for a successful hybrid workplace is really allowing people to bring their best, irrespective of how they choose or how they're able to work with an organisation. So for me, I think there's probably three ingredients to that success. Firstly, enablement. You're getting the tools and getting the tools in the hands of employees to allow them to interact in the way they see fit, ensuring they have your connectivity and security to enable that. The second is creating a level playing field. We at Cisco strive to create an environment where, irrespective of how employees choose to collaborate with their team, they feel like they can contribute on an equal basis, whether they be remote, whether they be at home, whether they be in an office. And thirdly, and I think most interestingly, or the area that's probably evolving most, is the need for greater leadership around creating a culture that's supportive of hybrid work and make it, for those that want to return to the office, make it worth the commute. Yeah, certainly employees are looking for different things now, ability to collaborate, looking for socialization opportunities, maybe rather than the traditional transactional reasons to come to the office.
I know Cisco has this term, trusted hybrid workplaces. Can you perhaps just explain what is that? And I guess, what is the long-term vision for these trusted hybrid workplaces?
Our aspiration is to create environments where people feel they can bring their best every day, irrespective of the mode they choose to operate in. So we strive for inclusivity. You know, we should ensure everybody can bring their best, irrespective of the way they're engaging. To do that, though, I think there's some things we need to think about in terms of, particularly from a health and safety perspective. When it comes to the home environment, I think longer term organizations are going to have to think about some of the policies around the home environment. Yeah, the home environment now is a legitimate and sustained extension of the work environment. And we need to ensure all our employees have a safe, supported environment to operate in there. And I think when it comes to the office, we're going to have to be more effective in just providing a safe and a monitored environment. Certainly from our perspective, we look at that in multiple ways, whether it's tools like our DNA spaces that allow organizations to understand how employees are interacting with the office environment. Our WebEx tools that allow us to monitor the number of participants in a meeting room, for instance, to ensure we're complying with the regulations. But underpinning that are the network elements. We need to ensure that the Wi-Fi environment is appropriately engineered. We need to ensure that the network is consistently and reliably engineered. And I think security has always been an important topic, but I think it's become even more important now. We can't predict now where and how exactly employees will want to interact with the organization. So it's a holistic approach to security to ensure that however they choose to connect with us, they're able to get a consistent security experience.
How can business and IT leaders think about this?
I think a critical piece of leadership here is going to be building that organizational and technology agility into the model. I think secondly, creating a culture of inclusivity where we do embrace people based on what they bring to a conversation and don't limit their contribution based on the way they're choosing to work. And the third thing I think is getting some of those policies in place. Hybrid work is here to stay. We need to get policies in place that will be there long-term to support that agility. It's something I don't hear a lot of, certainly. It's just that the point I made a couple of times about us shifting gears away from that defensive, how do we get through this pandemic? How do we get through this environment? To actually looking at it more proactively around how hybrid work is going to be an enabler and a differentiator.
That was Ben Dawson, Vice President, Australia and New Zealand at Cisco, speaking with us about the future of hybrid work. Cisco has pledged to positively impact 1 billion people by 2025, embracing the transformative power of technology to create a more inclusive world. To learn more about this pledge, head to cisco.com.au/bridge to possible.